Noah. We have in Perek Tes Pasuk Chaf. This is after the marble already happened. Noah comes off the teva. It says, "Vayochel Noah Ishu Adama Vayita Korem." There are three things that are strange in this pasuk. I'm going to loosely translate it. Noah began to start life all over again. He was a man of the ground, so he planted a vineyard. Okay, so that was the idea. He came off the teva and immediately planted a vineyard and took the grapes and made a vineyard out of it. Pasuk Chavaot, Vayesht Mina Yayin. He drank from that wine, Vayishkor, and he became drunk. Vayisgal Besoch Ehalo. It's a weird statement, but he lied down naked inside his tent. Vayisgal is the Lashon of Galui, that he revealed himself inside the tent and let himself go through. This is not what you expect from a man who literally just saves all of humanity and animal kind, from the whole animal kingdom, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. After hearing all about Noah's greatness, that he was a tzaddik tamim, which is an accolade that's not given to a single other person at all of Tanakh, to be called a tzaddik tamim. Something like that. For him to take care of all of the animals in the table with mesiris nefesh, like you can't believe, for an entire year, and did everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him to do for 120 years. The first thing he does is he gets drunk. It's beneath him. That's not what a person like him would do. And aside from that, we have to understand the reaction of the children. We all know what happened after this. Chum saw the nakedness of his father, and whatever he did, he did. That's not for right now. Shem and Yafes were the ones who came and covered him up. What's the point of the entire parsha if not to put down Noah? What's the point of what we're trying to say over here? So first, let's learn what the word Vayochel means. Vayochel is translated by the Rishonim in two different ways. Targum and the Ibn Ezra. Targum Onkelos and Ibn Ezra tell us it means he began to do something. From the word Maschil, he began to do something. I just said earlier, I was on a plane this morning, and the guy sitting next to me had a Holy Bible in his hands, and I turned to him and I said, can I just check that out for 1 second? I want to see what the Christians say. They agree with Ibn Ezra and Targum. That's what they say. They say, and he began, and he began to plant. That's what they say. It was problematic, says the Sforno, because that means that all the evil that grapes and wine have caused in this world, all the drunkenness and anything that drunkenness has caused, is all from Noah. If you started, sort of like what we talked about last week, you start something, you are due to everything else that happens because of it is because of you. So when Noah planted his grapes and made the wine and got drunk, drunkenness is now on his head. He is the father of drunkenness, so to speak. That's how the Sforno says it. That's the Targum of Ibn Ezra. Rashi says it could be understood as Noah making himself into chulin. He was kadosh. He was a holy person, a great person, and he made himself degraded. He knocked himself down. He debased himself by doing what he was doing over here. That's what it means by vayichal. There were so many other things he could have done, and he does this. Now, Rashi doesn't explain why planting a vineyard is a bad thing, but it could be explained in one of three different ways, I think. Number one, a staple should have been given first. If you want to plant food, that makes sense. Grain, like wheat, barley, spelt, oats, rice, something like that. You plant that in the ground first. But grapes, why would you do grapes? It's silly to do grapes. It's strange to do such a thing. That's the first question that you could ask. Number two, Sal, what were you going
to
say?
You're saying he's the first guy to become drunk.
Mm-hmm.
First human to become drunk, so... So he didn't do anything wrong.
Not the first person. The first person in this world. Remember, Adam Rishon may have had he may have had grapes and may have gotten drunk from the wine by the Eitz Hadas. There's no question that grapes and wine existed before him, but he's the first person at this time to have planted grapes. Without him, there would be no grapes. There would be no wine. That's the idea behind it. He was the first person like that. The second thing is that wine, until this point, could have been used for Simcha. It was used for Simcha. This is not the time for Simcha. The world had just been destroyed. This is the time when you're not supposed to have Simcha. So for him to plant grapes in order for there to be Simcha is the wrong thing to do at this time. And the third one is the exact opposite point. I mean, literally the exact opposite point. Wine had only been used for drunkenness and bad things. Planting this is going to bring that back in the world, and therefore he's blamed for that. So either because he didn't plant a staple, or because this is not the time for Simcha, or because this is bad. It's bad things for him to do. All those three pshatim are the under. understood. That's what Rashi is trying to say. The Kli Akor connects both Pshatim together. He, by doing something like this, not only did he degrade himself, but he pulled himself in this, the realm of Arayus, meaning he was maschil. He started to make himself worse, and he made the world worse. Here's the idea. He made himself into Chulin, and he began to bring that tumah in the world for everybody else. That's how the Kli Akor looks at it. But the Me'am Lo'i says that even here you see Noach's greatness. After the Mabul was destroyed, the earth was gone. People would give up hope. The first thing Noach did was he started planting again. First thing he did is he grew things. And if you'll remember, there's a famous Gemara with Choni HaMa'agel. Everybody knows Choni HaMa'agel slept for 70 years. Everybody knows that Gemara in Tainus and Dapchav. What? Similar. Yeah, he had the fig tree. Not the fig tree. Whatever tree was, like a buxer tree that takes 70 years to grow. That he asked the guy, why are you planting this? You're never going to eat from it. And he said, I'm doing it for my children, for my grandchildren. That's what I'm doing it for. That's what Noach is doing it for as well. He's not doing it for himself. He's not going to, he never thought he would get anything from these vines. But he planted it for everybody else there. It shows you how great he was. Had he planted anything else, he would have only been praised for his efforts. Nothing bad would have been said about Noah. The Ramban and the Rabbeinu Bachayo say that he was the first person to come up with the concept of a vineyard. We're going to see a little bit later on how great Noah was and akin to the ground. Everybody had planted grapes, but nobody had made a vineyard with rows and understanding where everything should be. He was the first person to create the concept of a vineyard where there would be rows and it would be easy to collect the grapes by going in instead of having wild grapes growing everywhere. He was brilliant in that way. You know, my brother's father-in-law has a in his backyard has a grapevine, a large grapevine that goes all around. It's on trestles that goes all the way up, almost like a sukkah, but obviously puzzle because it's all growing from the ground. So I saw and I looked at it, and all the grapes were really, really small. So I asked him what pshat was. How come the grapes are so tiny? They were like tiny, tiny little grapes. He said, if you don't cut down some of the grapes from the sides, if you don't prune them, there's not enough juices to go through to be able to feed all the grapes themselves. The concept of a vineyard is extremely important in order for the grapes to grow the way you want them to. You want them to be big. You need to make sure that there's just enough water for the amount of grapes. Noach was the person who was able to figure that out, says Rabban and Rabbeinu Bachayo. And thus, by Yochel, he was the one that started to do this. Now, that's the first part. That's by Yochel. Now, let's get into Ishua Adama. What does it mean that he was a man of the ground? That he was a person who ruled over the ground? So, Rashi tells us he was an owner of the ground. Ishes Ish means what? It's a man that owns his wife. That's not a word for the Shabbos table, but it's the idea of what the Ishes Ish is. That's what the word Ish means. The phraseology is used throughout Tanakh. Ish Noami. Elkanah was the husband of Noami. That idea of... I'm sorry, there wasn't... Elkanah, who is the husband of Naomi?
Elimelech
was the husband of Naomi. That's the idea of Ish Naomi, the husband that is in charge of Naomi. That's how Rashi understands it. The Ramban does not agree with Rashi. He says the Hadama is the place. Yossi, if you guys know Mishnah, it's from Perkei Avos. Yossi ben Yoezer Ish Sreda. Yossi ben Yochanan Ish Yerushalayim. Each place, that place is supposed to be there. Esav was known as an Ish Sadeh because he was found everywhere. So too, Noach was the Ish Adama because he could live anywhere in the world. The whole world was his for the taking. So he's known as an Ish Adama, says the Ramban, not because he owned the ground, but because he could live anywhere in the ground. He could be anywhere he wanted to be. That's why he's known as Ish Adama. Ibn Ezra argues, the Ramban brings this as well, that he knew all about the ground, that he was the first person to be able to do this. This is a crazy Medrashavkir here. Never heard this Medrashavkir before? Don't worry, you're normal. But I heard this Medrashavkir here in my second year in Eretz Yisrael, and I've never been able to forget it. Medrashavkir here says that Noach was the very first person to be born with opposable digits on his fingers. Up until the times of Noach, everybody had penguin hands. They had four fingers that were attached together and a thumb that was able to grab things just like that, but they didn't have opposable digits. The first person to have five separate fingers on his hand was Noach. He was the first one. And through that, they saw that something's going to happen to him. So they said, Zayin Achameinu, he's going to console us. Mima'aseinu mi'itzrindinu, from our deeds and from the sadness of our hands. Up until this point, because of what Cain did to Hevel, what Adam Rishon did, the ground has been cursed. It doesn't give us the food the way we need it to. But Noach was able to figure out with his opposable digits how to take the ground and sift through, how to make a plow to be able to sift the ground and make it better and thus plant. He was an expert when it came to planting. He was the the Ishu Adama. And as a side note, the words, this is from the Rabbeinu Ephraim, Zeyin Achamenu Mima'asenu Mi'itzvon Yadenu, is the same gematria as Yadayim Hayu B'li Chiluk Etzbos, that the hands were without the splitting of fingers. That takes an amazing, amazing person just to start thinking about that. But that's the idea of what it comes from. Jake, what were you going
to
ask?
I don't want to get too emphatic towards this, but like, is it possible this is evolution, meaning that there's some form of evolution, like that it fits in?
Oh, that's the trappy courses. I hate people like you, Jake. Yes, obviously they're like that. Listen, I've had a problem with this medrash for a long time because if you look back and if we look back at people who lived before that time, you see there are people that were born that they had opposable digits. So how does this medrash work? So it could be it's a drush and it's not to be taken literally, or it could be that there is something we're supposed to learn from. It might mean that the people had no ability to use their fingers in that way. Maybe that's what it meant, and Noah was the first person to figure it out. But yes, it's possible that it's an idea, not of evolution, not evolutionary theory, but of adaptation, right? It's like adaptation, sort of Lamarckism instead of Darwin. Yeah, what's up?
I recall hearing that Noah had weird thumbs.
He had weird
thumbs. His hands were weird.
This is for sure what it was referring to, and the guy just messed it up. Whoever told it, you just messed it up. But this is for sure what he's referring to. But this is the literal line. It says Ibn Ezra that he was a perfect person for stuff like that. The Maral Diskin says like this: the grapes should not have been eaten by Noah. It seems like he planted them and then he ate them immediately. But that's Orla. You're not allowed to eat Orla anywhere in America. Just a side note: if you plant stuff in America, you can't eat it for 4 years. 3 years, it's Orla. Fourth year, it's Netza Ravoy, which is a problem. That applies even in America. So you can't go around. I remember when my parents planted an apple tree in the backyard, and that first year I was like stuffing myself with apples. My dad was telling me that I'm an Avera boy just because I had all those apples and I was eating them as they were Orla. Look, it did nothing to me now. I'm just saying, like, I'm not such an Avera boy, but it happens to be that it's us and people don't know about it. Orla is something that people forget about all the time. Regardless, Maral Diskin says, how could Noah eat from them if they all should have been Orla? So he says these grapes were putter from Orla because they were planted for the robin. They were made for everybody there. Since they were made for the future, for all the people that are going to be around, they were made Lutzorah Rabin, that's that. So that's why he calls himself an Ishu Adama. I'm only eating from them because I made it for everybody, because I'm the man who owns the entire ground. I have everything that's in this ground. That's the shot behind it. I assume they still had some food left. Like, it would be awesome if, like, the day they came off the table, they literally had no food left, and they're like, well, we're going to starve to death now. And then they got something that I can get off. You'd assume. So I would assume that, yeah, they had to find something. But again, as we said before, it should have been wheat or barley, as opposed to that. There has to be something around. You're right. That's a good call also. There has to be something around. There is that. The Malbim, Victor Miller, the magician, Nelam talks about this. Let's end with this idea with the Chassam Sofer regarding Ishu Adama. Noach only had good intentions here. He had already brought korbanos from all the animals. He had brought a korban from all the different animals. Can you imagine this, by the way? He just spent 12 months making sure that all these animals survived, giving them food, not sleeping, running through the teva. There's barely any light, and all the animals are screaming and yelling and going crazy the entire time, and he's taking their dung and putting it down to the bottom, taking the food and giving them, hopefully not switching that up, right? And he's running around like a madman. After he comes off the teva, he kills them immediately. He takes korbanos and kills them immediately. He just spent a year working on these guys. And that he does, it's like the biggest mysterious nefesh you could possibly imagine. So he'd already done that, says the Chassam Sofer. Now he wanted to bring nisachim from wine. Nisachim are wine libations. With the korban, he wanted to bring wine libations from the grapes that he was going to grow. That's why he didn't grow grain. He didn't want to bring a mincha. He wanted to bring nisachim to go together with his korbanos. That's the pshat behind it, why he wanted to. And it was a tremendous idea. And he waited 3 years. 3 years for Orla. He didn't eat it during Orla, according to the Chassam Sofer. And in the fourth year, he went ahead and took it during that time. And when he was offering it to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yetzer Hara got a hold of him. And he had some, a little bit of the grapes, before he handed it over to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The fourth year fruits are called Hilulim. They're called Hilulim. The line over here of Vayechal is that he was over on eating that Hilulim. He was was over on eating the fourth year fruits. That's what it's called. That's what it meant when he started taking those fruits. That's how the sounds over. What's up, Brian?
It's hard to say that you did it for 4 or 3 years and all of a sudden the CSR got a hold of them.
Crazy, right? We have to go on a little bit more to understand that. But you're right. I mean, normally you wouldn't think that anybody would be there, but it could be that the grapes looked so good and he was so, as you said, they didn't have that much food left and he had to wait 3 years anyway. It could be he was starving. But we don't know. We don't know the details of that. All we know is that something got old, and maybe even matured it. Maybe he said, I have to eat from it myself before I give it over to a Kaddish Baruch Hu. Maybe he had a way of maturing it up, but either way, that's what he did. But the Alkul Reini says it totally differently. Noach are the first two letters of the word Nachash. He was connected to the Tumah of the snake. The Tumah of the snake. What did the snake do? The snake convinced Adam and Chava to eat from the Eitz Hadas. According to one opinion in Sanhedrin Daf Ayin, the Eitz Hadas was a grape tree. We don't know what that is. We have grape vines. It was a grape tree that was growing in the middle of the garden. And that grape tree that created wine, that was what the Nachash got them to eat. Noach is connected to that. And thus, he's an Ishwa Dama. What's Ishwa Dama? A man of the ground. He's crawling on the ground like a snake. A man of the ground, literally on top of the ground. Says the Kli Yakar. This line shows that he had done something very, very wrong. Ishwa Adama was a musservort over to Noach and telling him, you're a nobody. Says the Kli Yakar. You're doing what your body wants you to do, not what your neshama wants you to do. You've been good up until this point. You've been a tzaddik tamim up until this point. And now look at where you are. Now look at what you're doing. That's the pshat he's saying. You're doing what Adam Rishon did in eating from the Eitz Hadas by planting the grapevine. That's the idea of what he's trying to say over here. He then goes on, the Kli Yakar says, based on a pasuk in Mishlei, what ends up happening with wine? Yesh Derech Yasher with Neish. Yesh Derech Yasher, the last letters of Yesh Derech Yasher is Shechor, as in drinking and getting drunk. Because when a person gets drunk, everything seems mutter. Everything seems like it's okay. Everything seems Yasher. Everything seems okay. Some of you may have had this experience before, where everything seems to be perfectly fine. But the pasuk in Mishlei says in Parak Yedalet, the end of such a person who drinks this wine, darchei mavet, he ends up with death. There's nothing good that happens from such a person. Everything is gone. That's what the Kli Yakar says, and that's how bad it was for Noach. Then Noach started off thinking this is a good thing and ruined everything, destroyed everything from it. That's the idea of the Kli Yakar. Rav Wolfson in Emunas Yitzchak says such a crazy vort. Rav Wolfson, it's the best in the world. It's so long, I'm not going to be able to go into it. I'm just saying like a little part of it. He says the whole point of the Teva was to change the whole world. The Teva was a microcosm of the entire world. That's why every animal had to be represented. That's why all the plants were represented and put into the Teva. All the bugs, everything was in there. It was a microcosm of the whole world. The new world was the Teva. This was Gan Eden. Gan Eden was inside there. It might not have felt like Gan Eden. It might not have been like Gan Eden to Adam Rishon. But this was the concept of Adam Rishon before the Chait, where there was nothing wrong. All the animals in there were pure animals that had no bad taivas. All the people that were in there were in the schus of Noach. They were tzaddikim tamimim. And the point was that as soon as they came out and the world would be renewed, it would be Gan Eden all over again, says Rav Wolfson. Everything would have been fine. And if everything worked out well, it would have been a brand new Gan Eden that would have been there, and everything would have started growing right in front of their faces. Everything would have been great. But there was one person who messed it up. Who messed it up? We all know what happened on the table, right? Yeah. Chum was together with his wife on the table, which also was done by the dog and also done by the raven. They were together with their mates on the table. That bit of taiva brought into the world, the new world, the microcosm of the world, taiva. The whole world now is filled with taiva. Every animal had taiva. For that reason, the lion, who was fine with eating grasses and herbs and all the vegetation that he was eating in the teva, because that's what the lion does, Lassid Lavo. He lies down with the keves. He didn't have meat on the teva. He had grasses and herbs on the teva. The lion was fine with what he was eating. And as soon as Chum did what he did, the lion bit Noach and made him go lame in the leg. That's what happened when the lion bit Noah, because something was a little bit wrong. When Noah came off the table, he thought he was Adam Rishon before the Chait. He thought everything was fine. Ignoring what happened with Chum, ignoring what happened with the raven, ignoring what happened with the lion, thinking that everything is going to be perfect now. So the first thing he does is he tries to be metaken Adam Rishon's Chait. How did Adam Rishon sin? He ate from the grapes, from the Eitz Hadas. Noah said, I'll eat from the grapes and I won't sin. in wine, blessed level, when a person drinks wine in the future, by the times of Mashiach, there will be no such thing as drunkenness. You won't get drunk. People won't do it anymore. It's crazy, right? But people won't get drunk. And if people won't get drunk, say, Noah, I can drink as much as I want and I shouldn't have a problem. When he got drunk, he took off his clothes because Adam Rishon before the Chait didn't have clothing. He took off his clothes and he sat in his tent waiting to show everybody that it wouldn't affect him. And it did. He was wrong. It did affect him. Says Rav Wolfson, that's the idea of what happened. The sin of Chum affected his father so badly that he ruined the world. Chum, with his impetuousness and what he wanted to do on the table, destroyed literally the entire world. Rav Schwab talks about this as well, the concept of the Isra Adama. He wanted to fix up the ground. He wanted to change everything. He wanted to make everything new. And he couldn't. He messed up royally, and this is what happened. He brought more sin into the world by getting drunk and showing what drunkenness is like. The Igret Akala, Bnei Yisrael says, Noach wanted to figure out the full extent of Adam Rishon's chait. What exactly did he do wrong? He wanted to understand it. He wasn't being Mekatitz Benetiyas. The line of Mekatitz Benetiyas means sort of like cutting down the trees, as in like trying to be Metame himself, trying to get involved. He wanted to see what was wrong with such a thing. You should know, this is true even by great Hasidic rebbes in a way. And they try to lower themselves down to the person, the penitent, that's in front of them, telling them about their problems. They try to put themselves in their Talmidim's position. What would I do if I'm in that position? The problem with doing that is that you're lowering yourself to your student's position. That starts making you like them. That starts making you like them. You try to be all cool and say, like, hey, it's awesome that the Cubs won, right? And then all of a sudden, you start rooting for the Cubs. I'm not calling that absolute tuma. We know it's death, but sports are off. We know that. But it's the idea of lowering yourself down a little bit to whatever level your student is on makes you like them. You're taking care of a little kid, and you're playing with them. You become a little kid. You become part of that little kid mentality. You are that little kid. That's what ends up happening. Says Rav Schwab, that's what happened to Noah. And the Igret Akala says he wasn't able to come out unscathed. The only person who was ever able to do that was Avraham Avinu, but it's a little bit different. There is a crazy medrash. And if you've never heard this medrash before, then you've never heard a medrash before in your life. Okay? This is the greatest medrash in the history of the world. Literally the best board of all time. There is nothing like this. Medrash says it's brought by the Rosh. It's brought by different medrashim in many different ways. When Noah planted his vineyard, the Sultan came to him and he asked him to be his sharecropper. I'll work the field. You just give me the field and the stuff to plant. And Noah said, okay, to the Sultan, you work the field and I'll allow you to do it. So Sultan brought a pig, a lion, although some midrashim say a goat, a lamb, and a monkey. And he took those four, shechted them on top of the vineyard, took their blood, and used it to help the grapes grow. Pretty amazing medrash, right? So what's the shot? The Rosh says, it's obvious. When a person starts drinking, this person starts drinking wine. Let's say you're having it in the middle of a meal, right? You have a little bit of wine in a meal. So you're feeling pretty good. Like a little calm, like a sheep. Everything's fine. You know, everything's perfectly fine. You're able to sit there calmly, stuff. You can calm yourself down a little bit with a little bit of wine. You have a little bit more wine, a little bit more. That's when you become like a lion. You start, ah! You get really loud, start screaming a little bit. Maybe you start roaring at people, you're on! You start screaming a little bit. Other medrashim say like a goat, you start jumping on the table a little bit. Right? Start jumping on the table. Drink a little more wine, you're a monkey. Start hanging from the rafters, start swinging from the ceiling, go a little crazy, start dancing around, right? Start dancing around and everything. And then finally, you take the fourth cup, and then you're like a pig. You throw up all over yourself, you wallow in your own filth, and then you fall asleep in your own vomit. Right? I'm sure no one has been there. Right? But regardless, that's the idea. Says the Sultan, I know what's going to be with this vineyard. I know what's going to be when you plant grapes. You drink wine, and I'm shechting these four animals because it brings out the animal from within you. That's the pshat behind the medrash itself. The Kliyakar adds onto that and says, it's the four animals of Gullus. That's what it stands for. Think about the four animals of Gullus. Mitzrayim is is represented by the lamb because they worshipped sheep. Remember, they considered sheep to be their Avodah Zarah. That's Golas Mitzrayim. Golas Babel is the lion. Nebuchadnezzar is known as a lion by Yirmiyahu. He's the roaring lion, and that's Golas Babel. Skips Madai Uparas. I'm assuming that connects with Babel itself. Yavan would be the monkey. I would assume, he doesn't explain this, but I think it's Pashit, that Yavan thought themselves as great chachamim, great wise men who had very, very wise things to say. But they were monkeys who didn't understand that there was a God in this world. So they could sit there all the time and say, I think, therefore I am. And then they could scratch underneath their arms, right, while saying the exact thing and jump on a table and start hanging from the rafters. And finally comes Edom. We all know that Edom is known as a chazir. A pig. He's known as Yechar Semena Chazir Miyoar. Is a reference to Edom. That's the pshat. And that's the idea why the Kli Yakar says we're all connected to the four Goliaths. That's what's going to cause it. By us getting drunk and doing sins in Golos and doing what we did, that causes us all to go into Golos. And that's the four animals that are represented. It happens to be that the word Anovim, Ayin Nun Beis Mem, without the Yud, the letters before it are Samach Mem Aleph Lamed, which are the letters of the Satan, Samkel. Samach Mem Aleph Lamed is the name of the Satan himself. That's what it's supposed to be. So that's the idea. That's behind the Medrash itself. There's a bunch of other Pshatim behind this Medrash, and there's crazy a lot about this. But regardless, that's that. Now, how did he have these grapes? Rashi says that he brought stuff onto the Teva, and then he planted them immediately after the Teva was over. That's what Rashi says. Targum Yonasan, the Medrash Rabbah, and the Zohar all say that a river came right by Noah, and brought him grapevines from Gan Eden. Noah saw these grapevines that were in the river that were coming from Gan Eden, took them, planted them, and they immediately made a vineyard. Meaning he just took regular grapes and a vineyard popped out. Popped out almost immediately on that very day. He took that as a sign from heaven. He took it as a sign that God wants what he was doing, that making these grapes and everything was perfectly fine. And the Baal HaTurim gives a remez for it. My Rebbe Learfield gives a remez for it. But either way, that's what ended up happening. And he thought, if I'm supposed to do this, I'm supposed to drink from it as well. He took the grapes, squeezed them, turned them into wine, and he started to drink it. The problem was that his tolerance was not what he used to be. And he immediately got drunk and was together with his wife while he was drunk, which is us. A person is not allowed to be together with his wife when the person is drunk. And the Rabbeinu Ephraim learns it out from this word from the Kerem itself. That's when Chum found him and did what he did, which obviously doesn't go well into everything else. Says the Targum Yonasan, it was miracle grapes that were misused by Noach and caused everything that was going to be. So what's the point of this parsha? Why do we need to know about this? Why, after hearing everything that we said about Noach before and the greatness of Noach, that he was such a great tzaddik and he saved the world, why do we have to know this? Now that we know that it happened, and we know what happened, why do we need to know about this? What's the point of the parsha? The Rabbeinu Bechaya says, simply put, to know about the evils of wine. That the greatest of tzaddikim that has ever lived, the only tzaddik tamim, even he sinned through wine. And it doesn't apply to wine itself. Says the Rabbeinu Bechaya, it applies with any taiva. A lot of meat, a lot of wine, woman, whatever it is, any taiva that there is out there, too much of something leads you to only become a sinner. A little bit of each is fine, but each one going too far makes you into a fool, makes you into somebody that's not worth it, and that's what we're learning from the parsha. Even a tzaddik like Noah got affected by it, and it says to show you what each one of his three children became. You wonder why Chum became these people. You wonder why Yafis became these people. You wonder why Shem became these people. Says in the Tzitz, each one represented a different type of nation. Shem became the people who did things l'shem shamayim. What does God want from me? God wants me to turn around and cover up my father so that no one sees his nakedness. Chum looks at it and says, oh my gosh, is my father naked? I have to see that. I can't wait to see such a thing. That's what Chum stands for. And Yafis stands for Chachma. It's a wise thing to do to help out my brother and make sure my father is covered. He's not going to start it, but it makes sense. And if it makes sense, I'm going to do it. I'm going to go ahead and do it. And that's the difference between Shem, Chum, and Yafes from each one of their tribes. What each one had done over here. Now there's a Chassam Sofer over here and a Rav Hirsch that also goes through everything, but we're not going to be able to go through it right now. It happens to be it's an awesome Rav Hirsch as well. But regardless, let's leave it like that. We'll compare it to what the Netziv says. Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein says that there was the Saba Mikelm, the great Rebbe, the Rosh Shiva of the Kelm Yeshiva. Kelm was a Musar epicenter. It's a place where people would just, you became a different person. They say that if you made one extraneous movement, you know, like in Yeshiva, you're used to like the thumb going up and everything. In Kelm, they gave you Malkus for one extra movement that a person might have done. If you didn't need to do it, you would get Malkus. Rav Elia Lopian was once sitting by a bus stop, and he turned a little bit to go see if there was a bus coming. And when he turned a little bit, he looked back and he shook his head. Right? So his Talmud asked him, Rebbe, what just happened? Rav Elia Lopian said, if I would have been back in Yeshiva, back in the Musar Yeshivas of Europe, and I would have done that, I would have gotten lashes at Motzei Shabbos. Why? He said, me turning to go see if the bus is coming is not going to make the bus come any faster. So therefore, why should I bother looking? Okay, that might be a level a little bit beyond where any of us are. I agree. That might be a little bit crazy, and that might be a little bit much from where we are. But Yitzchak Zilberstein says that the Saba Mikelm had two Kalmidim that he was very close to. One was brilliant. He was in the highest Kabur of the Yeshiva, and he was together with all these tremendous, tremendous Kalmidim. And then there was another Bachur. Another Bachur was not as bright, not as brilliant, right? But nonetheless, he was working his way through, but he definitely was not on the level. The Saba Mikelm was spending a lot of time with the second Bachur, the one that was not as impressive than the first one, who was this brilliant kid who everybody said is going to be the next Gadol B'Yisrael, the next Gadol and Klal Yisrael. So the Talmidim eventually asked the Saba, who never did anything without a reason, why are you paying so much attention to him? You're ignoring the kid who has all the potential in the world. What's the difference between the two? And the Saba Mikelm said that the difference is, and I guess you can say, that he was learning sharp. There's no question. But he's in the Matzis where he's about to have a Yerida. And you can tell, he's reached his apex. He's reached the climax of where he's going to be in Yeshiva learning. He's not going up anymore. He doesn't want to go up. He's ready for the Yerida and he's ready to fall. For me to push him past that point may push him even further down. I want him to be able to work it out on his own. But the second buffer is on his way up. He's trying to climb the ladder and it's going to take him a long time and it's going to be hard for him. I want to be together with the person who's working on himself rather than being together with the person who's already on the way down. Here's the pshat. Noach was known as a tamim ish tzaddik, a person, again, no one's been known as this, a tzaddik tamim. He's like that. But at the end of the day, Noach had reached his climax. He couldn't climb any further. When Noach was given just one thing, go tell the people Musar, you have 120 years, go make for yourself chassidim, go find people to be with you on the teva. Noach is not only unsuccessful, he has 120 years and zero at the end of the day. Zero people on his side. That is the worst Baal Mekarev of all time. You can't think of anything like that. Noach went from an Ish Tzadik Tumim down to an Ish Adama. He lowered himself. He couldn't get any higher. Didn't want to be any higher, however it could be for such a person like Noach. And lowered himself to an Ish Adama. On the other hand, you have a man like Moshe Rabbeinu, who started off as a normal Ish Mitzri. When the people, when the daughters of Yisro saw him, they called him an Ish Mitzri. He looked like an Ish Mitzri. At the end of the day, became an Ishwa Lokin. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu became. Moshe Rabbeinu became greater. In a way, Noach was greater than Moshe Rabbeinu. You notice something? Noach had how many years before the Teva, in order to build the Teva right before the Mabul happened? 120. 120 years. How many years did Moshe Rabbeinu live? 120 years. It says the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu why HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to destroy the world is Bishagam Hu Basor, because there's still flesh and blood. Bishagam is the gematria of Moshe. Noach could have been Moshe. Instead of a mabul of destructive water, there could have been a mabul of mayim, which was Torah. It could have been that Noah could have given them Torah. He could have been the Baal Torah to give them everything. And he wasn't able to, because Noah had reached his apex and was now going down. Moshe Rabbeinu was climbing all the way up. The Ksav Sofer explains that the reason why is simple. Noah spent 500 years being Bodidus. He did not go near anyone. He didn't want to be near anyone. For 500 years, he stayed by himself in the forest and in the fields, and he learned by himself, and he did things on his own. He had nothing to do with other people, so that he wouldn't be involved with the Arias. It was a valiant effort. But at the end of the day, when he came back to try to convince them, come back to God, nobody would listen to him, because no one had any shaykhs to a person like Noah. He's a monk from Tibet. He has nothing to do with anybody. Nobody knows who he is. Nobody knows what he does. Moshe Rabbeinu lived with the people. He never separated himself. When he separated himself, he went back to habitation. He went back to civilization afterwards. Moshe Rabbeinu improved himself in a certain way that made him into an Ish Elokim, made him into a person who's constantly growing, instead of a person who, when he's by himself, he's great. When he's with other people, he messes up. That's how the Ksav Sofer looks at it. What's up, Jake?
I don't know who he was. Didn't they all know him as the guy who created all the tools for the to work the ground?
You're right. And at the same time, he's the man of the field who had nothing to do with anybody. He's that hermit who makes the things and then leaves them on people's doorsteps. And that would be the idea of how Noah lived his life, in that type of way. To end off, Rav Aaron Cutler goes through this idea as well. Aaron Cutler is a just Mishnas Rav Aaron on Chumash. I'm starting to get into it right now. He says that when a person is learning 15 hours a day, 15 hours a day, unbelievable, right? But then goes down to 10 hours a day. No one's going to say that a person who learns 10 hours a day is a slouch. A man who's learning 10 hours a day is a tremendous Talmid Chacham. There's no question about that. But you're going from 15 to 10. A person who goes from 15 to 10 automatically loses, even though he's still learning 10 hours a day. That's why the Gemara says, you learn something 100 times, you're still not serving God. Because you have the ability to learn it 101. You can do it 101 times. That's called avado, serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu one more than what you're used to, a little bit extra from what you have. Says Rav Aaron Cutler, Noach made this mistake with wine because he thought he was done. He thought he was ready. And the matzav that the Torah is trying to tell us is, when you think you're done, and you think you've reached your climax, you think you're there and you don't have anywhere else to climb up, that's the point where you start going down and you become an Isha Adama, a man of Gashmias. That's when you have to really start working on yourself, and if you don't do it, you're never going to be able to get to that level ever again. That's what Noah stood for. So to go over again what we went through, number one, we explained what the word Vayochel meant. We gave the two explanations, possibly a third. We then went through Isha Adama. We gave five explanations as to what the Isha Adama meant. We then went to the bad way of Isha Adama, how that could be a bad thing, how he's compared to the snake, and how he messed up the deal with Adam Rishon and what he did over there. We then went into the crazy medrash brought down by the Rush regarding the vineyard, everything like that. We mentioned the Targum Yonasan, that he got these grapes from the river that led out from Gan Eden. And finally, we ended what the point of this entire parsha was, how we're supposed to take this parsha with Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein's line of how Noach was able to lower himself down to the level of a very, very stom human being, instead of being the highest level that he could have gotten to, a Moshe Rabbeinu that he could have been. Shkoyach, everybody. We'll stop right here.